This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll take a look at the Major League Baseball season, where we're at here as we've passed Memorial Day. And what about those Atlanta Braves? Plus, I'll give you a top 10 list, most interesting teams in the league. And we'll continue to get ready for the NBA Finals coming up. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And you can always get in touch with the show. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show, 843-608-1734. Or you can join on the phone lines, 843-721-9500. We have the bracket for the college baseball tournament. Coastal Carolina, the only team from the state. I know NC State got left out. A lot of people are upset about that. NC State has such bad luck with their teams. They can't catch a break. Left out of the tournament field. And I'll be rooting for my UConn Huskies. They're with Maryland. Maryland is the 15th overall seed. UConn's the number 3 in that region of 4 teams. And the whole thing, it all begins Friday at noon. Will be the first games this weekend, all over the different ESPN networks. So Friday at noon, you got Florida State against UCLA, kicks it off on ESPN2 in Alabama this weekend. So anyways, if you're a college baseball fan, it's a lot of fun. You know, the one thing I will say, because I cover college baseball as part of the job at the Citadel, and obviously here, you know, we talked about Mark Kingston earlier. If you missed anything from the show, catch it on demand. But when it does, when it comes to a tournament, a playoff, it's almost like a March Madness, right? If you're a baseball, like there's so much baseball going on, so it's great. If you're a college baseball fanatic or just a general fan, I mean, there's so many games. I'm looking at the list here; it's a page long of all the games on Friday, and then you have the pool play, right? So it's not like it's just a field of 64 that now you're down to 32 the next day, so on and so forth. You got a bunch of games. Is the point of the message? So if you're into college baseball, I mean, what a weekend you have coming up. With all these teams in action, starting Friday at noon. Go UConn Huskies. Hopefully they make a little bit of a run. We started the show. Oh, you know what? Actually, before I get to this, we closed out last hour talking about the Indy 500 and their traditions. And I know traditions are traditions. But there was also a time where we used to get around with horse and buggy, and we decided to change that as well and come up with something called a car. And that's pretty good. That's working out pretty well for us. So we don't need to constantly have the Indy 500 winners, you know, chug milk just because that's what's been happening since essentially the 30s. As I said, I think we could get a better celebration. Give them some champagne or something. And I don't know if they get champagne too or what. Right? Give them some beer and they could stone cold themselves. Right? Pour that on themselves instead of this milk on a warm day out there. No, thanks. Now, Trent, are you a milk drinker?
No, Luke, if I am going to have milk, I would prefer it to be an almond milk, but I wouldn't even drink almond milk out of the glass, like just as a beverage. Yeah. I wouldn't have it. It's always got to be mixed in with a smoothie, potentially cereal or something. No, I've never been a guy that looks in the fridge and says, you know what looks good right now? An ice cold glass of milk. And there are a lot of people out there, and I respect them.
Yeah, I don't do it either. I know people who have milk like with dinner. I don't. That's crazy to me.
Ugh.
Yeah, no
with
thanks.
A steak? You're like, you know what's going to pair well with this steak is milk.
Yeah. Seriously. No, thank you. Yeah, I was never a milk drinker either. I'll drink chocolate milk, and I love a good strawberry milk.
Ooh.
That's some good stuff. And back in the school, you know, in the grade school days where you could get your little, you get milk with your lunch, you get your little carton, you had to peel it open, right? I'd always go with the chocolate milk. That's good stuff. But I was never a big milk guy. Even in my, I don't use milk in my cereal. If I ever eat cereal, I eat it as a snack. I eat it right out of the box, like I'm having chips or crackers.
Hot take.
Yeah, is it?
I don't know. I think. I mean, I've known a couple people that do that. They just prefer to just eat them right out of the, or pour them in a little bowl and eat your little cinnamon toast crunch. Yeah, I get
why not? The milk makes it soggy. Get it out. I like to just eat it right out of the box. The cereal's good enough. I don't need any milk messing it up. What would you rather do, though, after you win? Would you rather have the milk, or would you rather get down on all fours and kiss the bricks?
You know, I feel like every time I see the celebration at the Indy 500, there's a lot of milk being poured on, you know, whatever you're wearing and your face, and I don't like that. I think that's a little strange for me. I wouldn't do it, so I'd rather kiss the bricks. But both not great options, like you were saying. Let these guys have a little fun and get some champagne. What are we doing?
Yeah, seriously. You got to have milk and then kiss the ground afterwards. That's what the last plate, that's what the whoever finishes in last should do. You know, like kiss the feet of the winner. You win and you got to kiss the ground and you got to dump milk on yourself. No, thank you. We could come up with some better traditions than that.
That'd be hilarious if the last, if the loser had to go and kiss the feet of the winner. That'd be hilarious. That'd be something we haven't seen in sports since probably the 1600s. So that'd be great.
And then the winner gets to pour the milk on his head. That'd be perfect. That ought to be tuning in to the Indy 500. Get the milk out of here. Right, you got a job promotion. You get if you're in school, you get an. You don't go home and like, oh, I can't wait till I get home and pour myself a big glass of milk. No, you go and have a beer, or you have a cocktail, or something. Or if you're really having a good time, you spray open the champagne bottle and go wild. Get out of here with the milk. No, thank you. By the way, I've made a real effort here to say milk, because I always grew up, and a lot of people I know do this as well. I call it milk, like with an E, milk.
Milk, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. That's more of a Northeastern thing?
I guess. That's the more natural way. But I people don't like the way I say certain words, so I made a real conscientious effort here to make sure I'm saying milk. Make sure I say that I.
You get the I in there. Yeah. Now it's kind of like the milk. Bengals. Like both you and I, we get hate because of how we say Bengals. It's true. Bengals. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I still don't really see the difference. Bengals. I don't know. Milk. That feels weird to me, too. Milk. You have some milk. Except you don't have any milk. Get the milk out of here and give them something else so they'll actually enjoy drinking. Yeah, that is a weird thing. I agree with you. They'll like dump on you. That feels weird. Like, it's always the worst when you have wet clothes. You get caught in the rain. I can only imagine what it feels like to have wet clothes that are wet from pouring milk on you. That feels gross to me.
Beer's different. Champagne's different because that's either happened to you before if you've been at a party or, you know, but I've never in my life poured milk on myself. Yeah. Eating something hot, you want to have a glass of milk, but I'd much rather have water. I don't know.
That's true. They do say that. But I don't know if it works as well on a hot day. Have some milk to cool you off. I don't know. Call me crazy. But the Indy 500 went on over the weekend, and I thought, you know, these are kind of weird. We got to upgrade these traditions. Kissing the ground and chugging milk afterwards. That's one race. I'm fine with not winning that thing. I have to do those things. Let me circle back to this. I'm going to run through all sorts of takes from the first hour, right? So from time to time, we'll do a big two at two. There's more than just two things here. But as we get ready for the NBA Finals, I'm going to run through it all real quick. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it in full detail from the first hour on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. But a couple of takeaways from the NBA playoffs as we head into the NBA Finals. Number one being that as important as stars are in the NBA, just as important is a supporting cast. And that's what the Heat were missing. Because to me, Jimmy Butler was, everyone's going to talk about Jason Tatum. They were talking about him this morning. He's one of the few players in NBA history to put up the numbers he has in the playoffs before he's 25 and reach the NBA Finals. And the other guys who have done it have been legends, like Jerry West and Larry Bird, and I think LeBron was on the list. There's like five guys that put up the numbers that Tatum has while being under 25 and going all the way to the NBA Finals. But watching that series, the numbers may tell you one thing, right? Stats are like a bikini. They show you most but not everything. Numbers may tell you one thing. But to me, Jimmy Butler was the best player in the series, at least when healthy. He had those three games there in the middle where he was lousy. But he clearly was not 100. He was airballing shots. He wasn't 100%. Then he came back by game six, and I don't know if it was just the will, you know, just the fight that he wasn't going to go down that easy. But he came out game six and seven and was fantastic against the number one defensive team in the league. The Heat, to me, had the better player of the series, but they still didn't win the series. Why? Because the supporting cast wasn't good enough. Now, we've had times in the past where a star would carry a team, even if the supporting cast wasn't all that great. You could think back to all those LeBron teams when he was originally in Cleveland. And he didn't have a whole lot to work with, but he would carry them to the finals. Dirk Nowitzki won an NBA championship where he really didn't have a whole lot on that Mavericks team. And remember, they were mocking Dirk, and then he really turned it on. Allen Iverson carried that Sixers team 21 years ago to the NBA Finals. They had nothing else. They had Eric Snow and Theo Ratliff and a whole bunch of nothing. Aaron McKee. Even like Dwight Howard got the Magic to the Finals about 12, 13 years ago. You know, they had some decent role players, Turkoglu and Rashad Lewis, but it was really Dwight Howard was the guy. He was so hard to stop when he was on, right, when he was actually into the game. But now, it's not just about one star. You need that supporting cast. Kevin Durant last year, as good as he is, and as good as he played against the Bucks last year, once Kyrie went down, Harden went down, he went for 40 points in Game 7, still couldn't win. And you think back to the last couple of champions, Giannis was already an MVP, but he needed, you know, a Drew Holiday to be that missing piece to win a championship last year. And for as good as LeBron is, he needed a healthy Anthony Davis 2 years ago. And the Raptors had a pretty good supporting cast, you know, to put around Kawhi Leonard when they brought him into the mix. You need stars. That is true. We talk about that all the time in the NBA. I say it all the time. It's still true. You need stars to win. The last time we've seen a champion without a true star was probably the Pistons 18 years ago when they were just more like a team. They didn't have that necessarily that go-to guy. They were just a good starting five. That doesn't really win anymore. You need that star. You do need a Jimmy Butler. You need a Steph Curry. You need a Jason Tatum. But you need pieces around them as well. And the Celtics, to their credit, they had those pieces. In Game 7, they had three guys score over 23. It wasn't like Tatum went for 40 and nobody else did anything. It was a balanced attack. It wasn't like Jimmy Butler has to score 40 and try to make that pull-up three at the end of the game just to win because no one else is doing much. And Bam, to Bam's credit, he was a little inconsistent. He played well in Game 7, but overall, I need more out of him in the postseason. I need more out of the supporting cast of the Heat. So my takeaway, or if you want to call it a lesson from this postseason, is yes, of course, you need stars in the NBA, but you have to make sure the cast around them is also good enough as well. You can't just win with a star. That's just part of the battle. You can't just bring in a star in, have nothing around them, and they're like, okay, we're good enough to go win a championship. Now, LeBron needs help. Curry, we've seen that, needs help. Right? Durant needs help. All these guys. Jimmy Butler certainly needs help. You need that second star. Maybe it's no longer about the big three, but it's still kind of a big two. You still need a 1-2 punch. Butler and then somebody else that he could play off of on a more consistent basis than what Bam was giving you. The second takeaway from that series in the NBA playoffs is, as I said earlier, even great teams need to catch some breaks. You need to have a little luck. And that's not to take away from what you accomplish. I'm not telling you that the Celtics and the Warriors are only here because they got lucky. That's not the case, but in order for everything to go your way over the course of a long season and then throughout the postseason, you're probably catching some breaks as well. You can come up with plenty of examples in other sports. Right, the 49ers had the Rams beat. Tart drops the interception, and it's the Rams going to the Super Bowl and eventually becoming Super Bowl champs. 49ers fans probably feel like the Rams shouldn't have even gotten there. The Patriots dynasty started with the Tuck rule, and then when they were 18-0, lost to that David Tyree catch. And the Giants were the better team, but it also takes a little bit of luck. Eli Manning getting out of that sack, throwing downfield, Tyree makes the catch. You got to catch some breaks along the way. And I think the Celtics caught a break, because if Jimmy Butler was healthy all seven games, I think the Heat win this series. It came down to the final minute in Game 7 regardless, even with Jimmy Butler averaging like 10 points a game for three games of this series because he wasn't 100%. And it still went to Game 7. The Heat still almost won. If Jimmy Butler was healthy, because of as good as he was, I think the Heat move on. Right, sometimes it requires a break or two. And the Heat were banged. Hero was banged up. Kyle Lowry was injured, had to come back. And they had some injuries. Now the Celtics, look, they were missing some guys in Game 1 as well and throughout that series at times. But even with all the role players popping in and out of the series, if just Jimmy Butler was healthy, if that was the only thing you change, I think the Heat win the series. And sometimes it takes a few of those breaks to finish that run to a championship. When the Bucks won last year, it was in large part because Kyrie and Harden got hurt, and then Durant's toes were on the line when he made that three. The Lakers got a four-month break to get Anthony Davis and LeBron rested up for their championship run. When the Raptors won against the Warriors, that wasn't even the Warriors. They were missing all their best players. When LeBron came back down 3-1 against the Warriors, Draymond got suspended and Andrew Bogut was injured, and that really changed things. And this year, you look at this NBA Finals, and you have the Warriors face the Nuggets in the first round, missing two of their top three players. Then you face the Grizzlies without John Morant for three games. Then you face the Mavericks, who are a four seed. And a four seed has not won the Western Conference Finals in 16 years for a reason. On the flip side, the Celtics got to deal with the Nets and all of their drama. The Bucks without Middleton, even though that went seven games. And the Heat now with all sorts of injuries, and that went seven games. But as I said earlier, I the Celtics were the best team in the league the last 4 months, and the Warriors are the best team in the league the last 8 years. So I don't feel like these are undeserving teams, that these teams are only here because of the breaks they got. But as the cliche goes, sometimes it's better to be lucky than to be good. In sports, you kind of have to check both boxes. Right? To be a champion, you have to be good, but you also have to have a little luck as well. The Heat had the best record in the East, and they went to Game 7 in the conference finals. But their star, Jimmy Butler, was not himself for three games because of some knee inflammation, and that's probably what kept them back. They didn't have that luck. They didn't catch that break. The Celtics did. Celtics are going to the finals. Right, the Warriors didn't have to deal with Ja Morant. They didn't have to deal with most of the Nuggets. Then you got a four seed in the conference finals. It's not to say the Nuggets, the Warriors aren't good or shouldn't be here, but it does help to catch a few breaks along the way. Makes it a little bit easier on you than the Phoenix Suns dealing with a Chris Paul injury and a Devin Booker injury and Luka Doncic going off, and that's why the Suns aren't around anymore. Got to be good, but you also have to catch a few breaks along the way as well, which is kind of like life as well. You have to be talented, but you also kind of have to catch a few breaks to maybe make it where you want to. Right? Maybe you have to be in the right place at the right time, or you know somebody helps you get an in. You have to be talented to go anywhere, but you also have to catch some breaks, really in all walks of life, especially in sports. And the last thing I'll say on all this, takeaway number three, is that as we get ready for the NBA Finals, which begin on Thursday night, if Steph Curry gets this done, it'll be number four, and that'll be huge. Because you want to compare him to somebody else who has four rings, that'd be LeBron James. And you could say, well, LeBron, one of those rings was in the bubble, so that's really more like three and a half. And if you were to compare the two, Curry to LeBron, Curry did not have to leave to win his championships. LeBron did. Curry has changed the game of basketball. I don't know if LeBron has necessarily done that. And when we talk about like the all-time greats, we don't necessarily just talk about ability, because I want to make it crystal clear. I don't think Steph Curry is a better basketball player than LeBron James. I would take LeBron over Steph Curry. But I also don't think Tom Brady is the most talented quarterback we've ever had. And yet he's the greatest of all time because of all the winning. And when you look at it from a winning standpoint, Steph Curry went 3-1 against LeBron in the finals. LeBron didn't, he won one single game in the last two series. Steph Curry, if he wins this year, would be 4-2 in the finals. LeBron, for example, is 4-6. If you look at some other guys, Magic Johnson was 5-4. Shaq was 4-2, just like Curry would be. Larry Bird was 3-2. Kobe was 5-2. Curry would be one win behind him. He'd be 4-2. He'd have as many rings as LeBron in just more than half the amount of appearances. And the one knock would be, like, you know, it doesn't have the finals MVPs of a LeBron James. And it's fair, but let's not get bogged down in the individual awards. Because the example I used earlier was Phil Jackson. And basketball fans should be able to agree, he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. Right up there, like a Red Auerbach is maybe the best, or most successful at least. And yet Phil Jackson was only the coach of the year once his entire career. And sure, he coached some great talent, just like Steph Curry has played with some good teams. But for Phil Jackson, if you look at his career, Michael Jordan won 6 championships in 7 years with Phil and made it to 0 finals in the other 7 years without Phil. Kobe Bryant won 5 championships in 11 years with Phil. He did not win a single game after the second round of the playoffs in his other 9 years without Phil Jackson. So it's a little bit of a yin-yang type of deal, right? Like, Phil Jackson certainly had great talent to coach. That made it easier. But they also needed him as the coach. Steph Curry has made it easier that he's played with some good talent or on a good team around him. But they also really need him to be as good as they are. If Curry wins this finals and gets to number 4, it's an interesting conversation to be had when you compare him to LeBron. I'm not telling you Curry's a better player, but I do think he's made a bigger impact on the sport itself and the game of basketball and how we play it. I do think it's more impressive to have 4-6 appearances instead of 4-10 with the help of a bubble. And also, Curry will have done it in one place, the team that drafted him, instead of LeBron, who couldn't do it in Cleveland and had to go elsewhere to get his championships. Curry is not a more talented player than LeBron, but when we talk about the all-time greats, we talk about it from a winning perspective. Well, you don't talk about Barkley and Malone and Stockton in the NFL. It's why Marino is often forgotten. Never won a Super Bowl. Tom Brady's the greatest of all time, not because of his ability, but just because of his ability to win. And so for Steph Curry, you want to compare him to a LeBron or some of these other greats, right? Four rings, that's a big step. Four out of six, going to the final 6 of 8 years, doing it now a couple years removed when everyone's a little bit older and you don't have a Kevin Durant. These are all big things for Steph Curry and his legacy talk. The finals begin Thursday night, game one out on the West Coast. When we come back, we'll talk some baseball. Memorial Day is always that day where you wait till Memorial Day and then, okay, now we can look at the standings. Now we can look at who's struggling. What are the stats? What are they hitting? Well, Memorial Day was yesterday, so today we'll take a look at Major League Baseball. Where are we? About a third of the way through. Who are the most disappointing teams, the most surprising? Are the Braves going to turn it around? We'll answer all sorts of questions next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today. Due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Memorial Day has come and gone. Hopefully you had a nice holiday weekend. Talked about it earlier this afternoon, right? The majority of Americans don't realize what we're celebrating or why we have Memorial Day off, so don't lose sight of that. But still, with all that said, hopefully you still were able to have a nice long holiday weekend. Nice weather. Maybe you got to the beach, had a cookout. Memorial Day is usually the start of the summer. Maybe not so much in these parts because it's already been warm a little bit. But for the majority of the country, you look at Memorial Day as like, okay, weather's starting to turn, kicks off the summer, and it just changes a lot of people's mood throughout the country. Heading towards nice weather and vacations and the pool and the beach and more time off. You don't work as hard in the summer. Nobody does. And, you know, it's always a good time. When it comes to baseball, it's become a cliche, I guess, but people always say, right, wait till Memorial Day. Don't worry about the standings or the record until at least Memorial Day. And now that we're here, Memorial Day always marks about 30% of the season. We're almost a third of the way. We're in between the quarter and the third mark of the season here. So we're about 30% through. And this is the time where now, okay, you start paying a little closer attention to the standings. And now that teams have played just about 50 games. We're at about 48 games. And you look around, and the season did start a week late this year, so usually you're at about over 50 games, a third of the season, and you look around and see, okay, who really needs to get it going? Before we dive into that all, let me say, for baseball, again, yesterday, Memorial Day and July 4th should be the two big baseball days. Yesterday, you had no NBA. You had one NHL game. It was not until, I believe, 8 p.m. It was certainly last night. It wasn't during the day. And you had baseball throughout the day, and the night as well. You had 26 teams playing. I don't know why all 30 weren't playing. I don't know why you give a team a day off of Memorial. This is supposed to be one of your days. But the biggest issue was none of the games were on national TV. Now, MLB Network will pick up some games. That's not considered national TV per se. They even call it regional coverage themselves. But not a single game on national TV on Memorial Day. That should be the day for baseball. Everybody, just about everybody, should be playing during the day. Everybody should play on Memorial Day. People go out to the ballpark to go see the games, and you should have like a triple header like you'd try to do on opening day of just baseball games on ESPN or whoever, Fox Sports, anybody, throughout the day. Memorial Day should be a huge baseball day. People are at home. You got nothing to do. You're cooking out. It's nice to have a baseball game on in the background. No games on national TV. This continues to be an issue for Major League Baseball. But now that we're about a third, almost a third of the way through the season, biggest disappointments, biggest surprises. What should we expect from the Braves? Let's run through all this. Biggest disappointments, I'll give you five of them. The Red Sox are one. They're under 500, three games under 500 after getting to the ALCS a year ago and almost making the World Series. Now, last year, that seemed like a bit of an overachievement, so maybe they're regressing to the mean this year. but still, they have way too much talent to be under 500. They have way too much, too many weapons, too many bats in that lineup to have struggled as much as they did offensively in April. I would say the other Sox, the White Sox, have also been one of the bigger disappointments. They're only 500. They have not been more than a couple of games over 500. They're stuck at that five. You win two, lose two, win one, lose one. Right? They can't make up any ground. And the White Sox are one of those teams that over these past couple of years, the belief is they have one of the most talented rosters, and yet they keep underachieving. And right now, they're at 500. The Twins have a 4.5 game lead on them in the Central. Most people believe the White Sox will get it going and kick it into high gear the rest of the way. But they're disappointing right now. They're only 23-23. They had to release Dallas Keuchel over the weekend. They have not performed great. Abreu's been terrible at the plate this year. The Mariners are also a disappointment, 20-28. Consider the fact that last year the Mariners won more games than the Braves. The Braves won the World Series. The Mariners didn't even make the playoffs. Now, that also seemed a little bit like a fool's gold. I think they had a negative run differential last year despite winning 90 games, the Mariners. So anybody following baseball knew, like, yeah, they're kind of overachieving. This is a little fluky. And sure enough, this year they have regressed to the mean. The Mariners are 20-28. But they made some moves in the offseason. They went out and they got a Cy Young, and they added an outfielder who was on the All-Star team. And they actually spent some money for the first time in a while, Seattle did. And yet here they are, 8 games under 500. They're in fourth place, 11 games out of first. That's a disappointment. I would also say the Phillies are a disappointment. There's talks about Joe Girardi being fired from Philadelphia. They're 20-28. Now, what's odd about Philadelphia is they have a positive run differential, despite being 20-28. That would tell you that they're going to turn this thing around. That the Phillies are going to have a good second half of the year. That they've had some bad luck. We'll see, but what a disappointment. The Phillies are another one of those teams, kind of like the White Sox. Expectations have been high the last couple of years. They spent some money, right? Brought in some guys, paying Bryce Harper a lot of money. And both teams went out and got those managers that they thought would be the missing piece. Tony La Russa in Chicago, Girardi in Philadelphia these last couple years. And now Girardi's on the hot seat in Philly because it's been such a disaster. And the last team I'll give you as a disappointment is the Atlanta Braves. Because, look, they're the defending World Series champs. And yet right now they're 23-26, under 500, and they're already 10 games out of first place on Memorial Day. That's not great. Now, they just won the World Series, so they probably have a little bit of a grace period. If you're a Braves fan, A, maybe you're still content with last year's run, and B, maybe you point to last year's run for a reason why the Braves are never out of it. It's too early right now to get worried. But 6 of the last 9 World Series champions missed the playoffs the following year. I've done this on the show before. I had all the data. It's very difficult for teams to repeat in baseball. They pitch a whole extra month while teams get a month off. Then you have a shorter offseason. Then you try to ramp it up in the next year. Your arms are taxed. Even the hitters are a little more worn out. You played, 30 more games than anybody else. It is hard in baseball. The season's so long. To then play an extra month and then come back with one less month of offseason, it's a hard deal to try to repeat in baseball or just to try to have a good year after winning the World Series. But the Braves still have plenty of talent, and the season is still young enough. Consider that the Braves last year on Memorial Day were 24-26, almost the identical record as this year. Consider that the Nationals, when they won the World Series 3 years ago on Memorial Day, were 24-33. So two of the last three champions were under 500 at this point in the season. So just because a team's under 500 doesn't mean that their season's over with. We still got a long way to go. Now, a couple of the biggest surprises. The Yankees, to me, are a surprise. Maybe I was just wrong. I guess I was. I picked them to finish fourth in division. But they're tied for the best record in baseball. I did not see this coming. And Aaron Judge has been an MVP playing in his contract year. So the Yankees have surprised me. I thought they would be good. I thought their whole division would be good. But I did not forecast the Yankees. Right now they're playing on pace to win 111 games this year. I didn't think that'd be the case. The Mets are also a surprise. The Mets are on pace to win over 100 games this year. They're in first place. They have a 10-game lead on the Braves. It's Memorial Day. But they're also doing it without Jacob DeGrom, who hasn't pitched at all this year, and Max Scherzer's been out for the last few weeks. Now Brandon Nimmo's on the IL. The Mets, missing two of the best pitchers in baseball, have won 2/3 of their games. That's impressive. It's the largest lead the Mets have ever had in franchise history in May. They're already up 10 games on the Braves. It's really impressive what New York has done. And by the way, this is the first time since 1988 that both New York teams are in first place at Memorial Day. And the other surprise, the Twins. 29-20. Last year, there were 16 games under 500. Right now, they've won 60% of their games. They're in first place. They've dealt with some COVID issues. They're playing much better this year. Carlos Correa just went on the COVID IL. We'll see what is going on in Minnesota. But so far, so good for the Twins and the way that this season has started after they were so bad a year ago. Here we are at Memorial Day. Now, FanGraphs always updates the playoff odds. Take this all with a grain of salt because the Braves, on July 4th last year, had like a 0.5% of making the playoffs. Something ridiculous, right? And they won the World Series. But according to FanGraphs, if you look at the first-place teams, the Yankees have a 98% chance of making the playoffs. The White Sox are still favored in the AL Central with a 48% chance of winning the division. In the AL West, the Astros are in first place. They have a 98% chance of making the playoffs. In the National League, the Mets have a 65% chance of making the playoffs. The Braves have a 65% chance of making the playoffs, a 21% of winning the division. And the Braves are given still a 6% chance of winning the World Series. The Brewers are in first place in the NL Central. They have a 95% chance of making the playoffs. And the Dodgers are in first place in the NL West. They have a 99% chance of making the playoffs. The other thing I always preach about baseball and really all sports, run differential. It's important to look at. So some things that jump out here. Toronto is 27-20, and I know I'm using a lot of numbers here, but the Blue Jays are 7 games over 500 with a negative run differential. That means they're overachieving right now. We'll see if they keep that up. The Red Sox are under 500 despite having the fifth-best run differential in the AL. They've been playing better baseball in recent weeks. The numbers suggest that the Red Sox have underperformed so far. Maybe they get it going. In the elsewhere, in the AL Central, the Indians are under 500 with a positive run differential, so they're a team that could be prime for some sort of turnaround. And in the NL, here's what's interesting about the NL East. As we focus on the Braves, have a negative run differential, and they're under 500, so maybe that should be expected. But then you have the Phillies and the Marlins, who are both behind the Braves and both have positive run differentials, despite being 7 and 8 games under 500 respectively. So what these numbers tell you is that the Phillies and the Marlins have underachieved so far. They should have more wins than they currently do. Maybe they start to play better as the year goes on. And the numbers tell you that they've actually outplayed the Braves. The Braves have played as the second worst team in the NL East, only better than the Nationals so far. That's troubling for the Braves. And when it comes to the Braves, as mentioned, they have still a 65% chance of making the playoffs. On the text line, somebody says the Mets will win the division, the Braves will win the wild card, and lose in the second round of the playoffs. If you're Atlanta, there's still enough talent there. Now, they haven't played great, right? Like, you look at Adam Duvall's batting under 200. Matt Olson's been slumping of late. And so what happens a lot of times after you win a World Series, guys just, you know, things don't click as well as they did the year prior. Maybe you're missing a Jack Peterson and what he brought to that locker room, or certainly a Freddie Freeman. But you believe the talent is still there, and you know that after what you saw last year, the Braves almost had an identical record at this point of the season, still won the World Series. So you can't count them out. It's a little more daunting when you're already 10 games out of first, but if there was ever a team to have ahead of you, you probably want it to be the Mets, because the Mets, historically, are chokers. In fact, last year, they were in first place for 100 days of the season, and they finished the year under 500. So it's certainly far too soon to count out the Braves already this baseball season. When we come back, the 10 most interesting teams so far of the baseball season. It's our Tuesday Top 10, and we'll do it next. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
A smile, they can share the night. It goes on and on and on and on. Strangers waiting. Up and down the boulevard, their shadows searching in the night. Streetlights, people.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Memorial Day is always that first important benchmark of the baseball season. Coming up in just a moment, we'll rank the 10 best teams in baseball so far. We do a top 10 list every Tuesday, and we'll do that in just a sec. Hey, Fan Talk will be out at Cruise Chevy coming up at the top of the hour. I actually have to stop off over there to return the car. I appreciate the fine folks at Cruise Chevrolet always helping me get out on the road, in this case up to Greenville for the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament over the past week. And so bring the car back to them, and I'll get to see Bobby in the natural habitat for the first time out there at Cruise. I know he's always out there. Fine folks over at Cruise Chevy always helping us out. Good people over there. So I'll be over there, and Bobby will be doing a show out there coming up this afternoon. So stay tuned for that. Every Tuesday, we do a top 10 list. Now, we're talking baseball here in this final hour with Memorial Day having come and gone. So let's, of course, rank the 10 best teams so far. I call them the 10 most interesting teams, but really, as I sat down and ordered them top 10, I realized I was just picking out the 10 best teams. So the 10 best teams in baseball right now, as we're about a third of the way through the season. It's today's Tuesday top 10.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Top 10 teams in baseball so far. Number 10, the Blue Jays. Starting to get hot finally. They've won 5 in a row. They're now 27-20 after just missing the playoffs a year ago. But the concern, as I mentioned last segment, they have a negative run differential. They should have a losing record right now. They're 7 games over 500. So the metrics tell you they're really overachieving. But certainly, if we're talking interesting, they're interesting. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been terrible so far this year. He's been a little banged up. You know, he's an MVP candidate. The offense is starting to get going. So we'll see which direction the Blue Jays go in. But they usually are a fun team. They're usually interesting because they have some bats and they can hit some home runs. Number 9, the Twins. Now, the concern is if the Twins can still hold off the White Sox. Most people still believe Chicago will win that division, and the Twins are one of those teams that, you know, they're just getting off to a good start, but they'll fade. They can't hold on to this. Maybe they'll get in as a wild card team. But every year we have those teams that by the time we reach October, you look back and say, like, man, remember when so-and-so was in first place when they got off to such a good start? I mean, what happened to them the second half of the year? That could be the Twins. Can they hold off the White Sox is the big question. But this Twins team, they had a run of success. Last year was such a down year that maybe last year was the outlier. Then you brought in Correa this offseason. They made some other moves, and they're playing good baseball right now. Can they maintain it? That's the big question. Number 8 is the Angels. Now, the Angels have gone just 6-6 in their last 12 games. They're not playing great baseball right now. But they're always going to be at least interesting. They're in second place in the West, but more than that, they'll always be interesting to at least tune into because you have Trout and you have Ohtani. You have two of the best players in the game. You have Ohtani, who you go to the ballpark, watch him pitch, and then hit a home run at the same time. And you have Joe Maddon, the mad scientist, as the manager. So the Angels are always interesting. Rendon's been lousy. If he could get going, right, that'd be a big boost. Syndergaard's been a nice addition to the rotation. The Angels, I picked them to win the division as a surprise at the start of the season. We'll see if they can maintain this playoff position. Number 7 are the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays are always interesting because you wonder how they do it. And this year is no different. They don't have a great roster on paper, at least not household names. The offense has not been great this year. They've had a lot of guys on the IL, and yet here they are. They just split a weekend series with the Yankees, and they're in second place at 28-20. They do it every year. I still don't know how they do it, but the Rays are always intriguing, interesting, competitive, usually a good team, with guys you've never heard of. They're number 7 on my list of the top 10 teams right now in baseball. Number 6 are the Padres. Manny Machado is quietly having a great season out there in San Diego. And while the Dodgers are doing really well, best record in baseball, the Padres are only 3 games behind them. I think because of how disappointing the Padres were last year, ask Jock Peterson and his gifts in the group text, because of how disappointing they were last year, some people already kind of forgot about them for this year, but this is what we were expecting, that they would be right there in an arms race with the Dodgers, and they're doing it without Tatis Jr., so the Padres are a team to keep an eye on. Now, the concern for the Padres, they have a losing record against teams with winning records so far this year. So they've beaten up on a lot of bad teams, have not been good against good teams. Maybe the Padres are a little fool's gold, but right now I put them at number 6. Top 5 teams in baseball, the Brewers are number 5, and the Astros are 4. What's interesting is the Brewers have the same record as the Astros and the same run differential. So they've played just as well as the Astros. They have great pitching, maybe the best staff in baseball. You just don't hear about them as much because it's Milwaukee. The Astros are number 4 for me. They've had great pitching of late, but those two teams are very similar. Same record, same run differential, both strong pitching staffs. Astros 4, Brewers 5. Then the top 3. I put the Yankees at number three. The reason why I put them three. In fact, I'll give you my top three. Yankees three, Mets two, Dodgers one. Quick explanation. The reason why I put them in that order. The Yankees have gone 500 now, 5-5 in their last 10 games. And when I look at their lineup, they have two guys batting 260 or higher. And I know batting average isn't the most important thing anymore like it used to be. Batting averages are low across the league. But if you look at the Yankees lineup, I'm not all that impressed. You have Gallo hitting under 200. Anthony Rizzo is batting about 210 now. They're a team that still, right, they live by, they hit a lot of home runs. But the guys that were having a big year, Aaron Judge would be the MVP for me right now, and Giancarlo Stanton were the two big bashers doing their part, hitting a lot of homers, driving in runs. Stanton has gone on the IL, and now the Yankees are 5-5 in their last 10. So my concern is their lineup just isn't deep enough. And now that you remove Stanton, they're playing 500 baseball. That's why I put the Yankees at number three. They're tied with the Dodgers for their best record in baseball this year, but I think the Dodgers and the Mets right now are playing better, or at least are more impressive, because the Mets I put number two. The Mets have a 9.5-game lead on the World Series champions. It's their largest lead in May ever in franchise history, largest lead right now in baseball. And they're doing this all, winning 2/3 of their games without DeGrom or Max Scherzer, two of the best pitchers in baseball. That's impressive. If you take the two best pitchers off of most teams, I don't think they have a 10-game lead a third of the way through the season. That's how dominant the Mets have been, especially within their own division. So the Mets have been really impressive. Now, can they keep this up? I don't know, because we've seen the Mets crater in the second half of the season many times. That'll be the big concern. At number one, I do put the Dodgers. The Dodgers are number one in team ERA. They have the best record in baseball. They have the best home record in baseball. They have the best run differential in baseball. They're on pace for the second best run differential in Major League Baseball history. The advanced metrics tell you they have the best lineup in baseball. They have the best everything. They have the highest payroll, so they should be the best in all these areas. But the Dodgers are number one. I don't know if they actually win the World Series, but right now they are playing like the best team in baseball, and they're doing it in all areas. They're hitting the cover off the baseball. They're shoving on the mound. They're doing it all. They're the best team in baseball right now. Now, those are the 10 best teams in baseball as I order them here after Memorial Day. If we're truly talking interesting, I would put the Braves on that list because defending World Series champs under 500 again. I do think the Braves are interesting. They have the largest deficit of any second-place team in the league. And we're talking about the defending World Series champs. Can the Braves turn around their season again this year? I think they're one of the more interesting teams to keep an eye on right now. I think the White Sox. The White Sox are only 500, but they have loads of talent, and many still believe they're going to win that division. In fact, the computer models still give them the best odds to win the AL Central. So the White Sox are an interesting team to keep an eye on. People are not concerned by their slow start, and people are not buying the Twins' fast start. Can the White Sox actually get it going and still win that division? And maybe I'm biased, but I think the Red Sox are a very interesting team as well. As I shared earlier, they're three games under 500. They're in fourth place in their own division, but they have the fifth best run differential in the AL. Now, as a Red Sox fan, I watch all the games, and I can tell you, right, the number of crushing losses they've had in extra innings or in the ninth inning or by one run, they've lost a lot of close games, and they've won a lot of blowouts. If they could get the bullpen figured out, the bats have finally gotten going. In fact, I'll say this about the Red Sox. Boston has hit .313 as a lineup over their last 20 games. The next closest team is batting .274. In the last 3 weeks, this has been far and away the best lineup in baseball. Keep an eye on the Red Sox. They've really struggled with the Orioles for whatever reason, as they did this past weekend, but they're playing some good baseball of late. And I'm curious to see if they could keep it going or if it's just, you know, one good month they're having. And I'll also say the NL West is really interesting as well. You have the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants all over 500 battling. And you also have the Rockies and the Diamondbacks hanging around. The worst record in the NL West is Colorado. They're only four games under 500. Meanwhile, the Braves are in second place at three games under 500. So that NL West is intriguing. Not all five teams are going to stay competitive. Maybe only two at best go to the playoffs. But right now, that's a good division. And the last thing I'll say about interesting, also the Angels. The Angels are already starting to fade. Can the Angels hang around? You have Ohtani, you have Trout. They've never won a playoff game. You have Joe Maddon. You have Syndergaard. You have Anthony Rendon. You have Michael Lorenzen playing both ways. You got a lot of interesting pieces. And the Angels have underachieved for years. Can this year be the year they finally go on a playoff run? They started off really well. They've been 500 the last 2 weeks. Can they stay in this race throughout the summer? Because that's what Major League Baseball needs. The NHL playoffs have been great. But the issue with the NHL is they don't have anybody that's going to get you to a TV unless you're a fan. The average hockey or the average sports fan is not going to say, man, I got to watch the Oilers tonight because of this Connor McDavid. And baseball has a similar issue. But you need Ohtani and Trout to be as intriguing or interesting for as long as you can, because those are two guys that could potentially get the average fan to the TV. In football, you'll watch a football game even if your favorite team's not playing. Basketball, you'll probably watch the NBA playoffs even if it's not involving your favorite team. Baseball and hockey are different. You're usually only checking out your favorite team and maybe another game every once in a while here and there. That's why you need Trout and Ohtani to be in the mix, because those are guys that maybe could get the casual baseball fan or the casual sports fan to a TV in the summer to want to watch those guys play baseball. We'll wrap up your Tuesday next. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Wrapping up your Tuesday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download the app and listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world, right there through our free app. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least seven different states and multiple countries on this Tuesday as we get back going this week. All right, these four-day weeks are always nice. I imagine most people, hopefully everybody, had Memorial Day off yesterday. And, then you get these 4 days. A lot of people, especially summertime, they're only working 4 days anyways. It's great to have the official start of summer now. Baseball, we're And third of the way through, you start paying attention, see if the Braves can turn this whole thing around. You get ready for football 100 days away. It's always a good time of the year. Hopefully you had a great, happy, healthy Memorial Day weekend. Good to be back. We're off and rolling. The NBA Finals begin Thursday. We'll continue to get ready for that. And tomorrow we'll talk about the SEC meetings currently going on, starting today in Florida. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.